couple of months ago, we sent some funds to the Philippines after a typhoon, and there were brethren in great distress for food. And we also sent some funds to India, where the Delta variant began, and it closed down everything. People were not working, and they were in need there. I want to appreciate the elders for what they did. There's some elders that think they are the exclusive decision-making committee. They make the decisions, and then they come out and announce what they have decided. That just misses the community nature of the church, the body nature of the church, and all the passages in the Bible that says the church did, the church did. And so our elders here lead us, and that's the meaning of the word that is translated rule so often in the New Testament, in some translations. And they brought this to our attention, they got your feedback, and that was decided to do, and we used men that we located in those places as our messengers to get the funds to those people who were in need. And I appreciate that kind of leadership that involves the congregation, and we act as a community, as a body, as the congregations did in the New Testament. Today, we're going to look at this idea of sending funds elsewhere to relieve the needy that happened in the New Testament. And there is a pattern there for us to follow, and we have followed that. And this is a decision and information I had to come to after I started preaching and was faced with the problem and what to do about it. And basically, this is it. That as Christians, and we'll look at passages, we have responsibility to all men. We have responsibility to communicate, to share. And God's church then works in that capacity as all of us do good and we help people. I have known people that say, no, I don't help other people. I give to the church and then I let the church help other people. That's totally contrary to the system that we find in the New Testament. And with the need there is in the world today, if you find people in foreign lands who are in need, feel free to send. You find your neighbor who needs, feel free. Not only feel free, but feel compelled to help somebody in need when you can do that. That is one of the way God's church works. We also have a collective responsibility as a congregation, and as I said a moment ago, as a community. And that community, congregations, are responsible for their needy saints. And when they have more than they can help, there are churches that send to those saints from elsewhere, and that's what we did when we sent funds to Christians in India and funds to Christians in the Philippines. And it's that thing I want us to study about from the Bible today, that as a congregation using the funds, which is called a fellowship, that we collect together, those funds in the New Testament, when it comes to helping needy people, are in their use limited to the needs of the saints. There is no exception to that in the New Testament and all the occasions where those things transpired. So looking at that, we see that individuals have some latitude and freedom that the congregation does not have, or even we may say have responsibilities. There is a distinction. There are some people who have taken the position that whatever I can do as a Christian, an individual, the church surely can do. Well, no, there are a lot of things you do as a Christian the congregation does not do. And let's see that the Bible does make that distinction. Turn to Matthew the 18th chapter, please. All right, if you've got your Bible ready there, I want you to read for us beginning in verse 15, please. Okay, Tim, do you have yours? Okay, Matthew 18, 15, beginning through verse 17.
If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen to even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector.
So we have in this circumstance Christians, individuals, a plurality of them. And so people say, well, you know, the people just the church, so when we do something, that's the church doing it. Well, that's a part of the Church Universal doing it, but it's not a part of the congregation. Because here you have two, three, four people, they're involved in spiritual activity. One's in sin, the other two are trying to restore him. That's a spiritual work that is being done. And so we've got two, three brethren, they're working with this man, and he, or woman, and don't want to be sexist here, and he refuses, he just will not repent. Then what do? You tell it to the
church.
Then if they tell it to the church, they are not what? Okay, they're not the church. They're not the congregation. They're not the local assembly. And the meaning of the word church is assembly. So these people, a plurality involved in them, are not doing the work of the assembly. Their function is one thing. The work of the assembly is another thing. And then the assembly takes action with that regard. Turn to 1 Timothy 5, verse 16. Josh, if you'll read that for us. 1 Timothy 5, 16. Here is where a woman does something that the church, congregation, is forbidden to do. Josh?
If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them and do not let the church be burdened.
Okay, so they're doing something. Is that the church? Is that the congregation doing it? No, it's not. Because if she can do something, she is to do that, that the church, the congregation, is not moved to have to act in that capacity. So you've got individuals in the New Testament, and when you take all the individuals in the world who are Christians, who are saints, that's what the church is. In Ephesians 5:23, Jesus Christ is the Savior of the body. And the body is the what?
Church.
So he is the Savior of the church. And that just means that the church is all the saved. Wherever you have saved people in the world, that's the Lord's church. It works as we go about doing good and being lights in the world and being leaven in the world. But we also have a collective capacity where we meet in our communities as congregations, and that's something else. And so here, our congregation forbidden to do what she is told to do. So I'm just making this point. There's a distinction between what we do as individuals, even though it may be a plurality of us. If some of us want to get together and start a business for helping needy folks, have at it. But when it comes to the congregation under its elders, as the capacity of a local assembly of Christ, it does not go by the same things and same responsibilities. There are responsibilities given to individuals that are not given to the assembly. There are things that are given to the assembly to do that are not given to the individual to do. What we've seen in these passages is this. There's a distinction between the individual and the congregation. So how do we decide what to do in those capacities? Turn to Romans 6 and verse 17. Phil, if you'll read that for us, please. Romans 6, 17.
6:17.
Okay, standard of teaching, that's a good translation. The King James American Standard Version, older translations, good translation also, but may have misled people. What do some of the rest of you have in that text? You have become obedient to that
form
of doctrine. That's really, literally, the idea. It is a form, it is a mold. Like you have a mold and you pour something into it. Right now, just think Jell-O mold. Ugh. And then you pour it out, and the Jell-O is shaped like the mold. And so we are servants of righteousness, and we were servants of sin. There is a mold of doctrine. And in conforming to that, we are servants of righteousness. So if I want to find out what I'm to do as an individual, if I want to find what we are to do as a congregation, we go to the standard or the mold and make sure our actions comply with that. So to find out what we're supposed to do, we go to the bowl. Turn to 2 Timothy 1 and verse 13. Fred, if you'll read that for us, please. Fred.
Hold fast the pattern of sound
words. Hold fast to the what?
Pattern,
mold. Of sound words, And so we do not just decide in religion what we want to do, what we want the church to be, what we want our lives to be like. We go to the pattern that is given for our lives. As an assembly of saints, we go to the pattern to find how to conduct ourselves according to that pattern of sound words. Turn, please, to 1 Corinthians, the 4th chapter, verses 16 and 17. Al, if you read that for us. 1 Corinthians 4, verses 16 and 17. 1 Corinthians 4. So we learn by statements and commands, obviously, but from this passage we also learn how. By doing what? I'm not hearing it. Being imitators or following an example. Yes. So we learn by statements and commands. And here Paul says, I want you also to learn by what you have seen in me. I'm sending Timothy to remind you of my ways. And his ways, not just what he has commanded, but his ways, what he does and how he serves Christ, is taught where? Everywhere in every? Okay, Fred.
Isn't there another verse that says, imitate me as I imitate Christ?
Yes, 1 Corinthians 11, and this passage too, I think, may say that earlier. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1, yes. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. Philippians, the 4th chapter and verse 9. The things which you both heard and received, no, you learned and received and heard and saw. The things which you, I'm trying to quote it. If somebody's there and wants to read it, you can read it.
What?
Yes. So the things that you received and heard and seen in me, these things do, and the God of peace shall be with you. So from how the apostles conducted themselves in their individual lives, in their work with congregations, as a part of a congregation, then those things we see, we are to imitate. We learn by example. Now, I'm not going to go extensively into the idea of inference and learning by that. It would take several more minutes than I want to take, but I'm going to say this very briefly. Some people think that this idea of learning by statement and learning by example and inference is a religious rule made up by somebody for us to understand the Bible. That's totally wrong. It's what Roger Bacon called in the 1500s, late 1500s, common sense, an analysis of common sense. It opened up the Enlightenment, and it also led to the idea of scientific method. So before that, we find the world in a lot of darkness. They had mechanical skills. They had mathematical skills. They built the pyramids. They built great temples. But when it came to their thinking, it was difficult for them to put things together the way it just opened up the world in what is called the Great Enlightenment. And Roger Bacon was the one who put these things in words and those principles. It was not made up for religion. And when people want to go to a new theology or a new hermeneutic, what they're doing is they're wanting to throw out the way of thinking that has brought great blessing to the world and great progress to the world. It was not a religious law. It was what Roger Bacon said. This is just common sense, and here is what common sense is. It is learning by statements and commands when you're following something authoritative. It is learning by precedent, and it is learning by inferences that you draw from the information you have. That's the scientific method. Go ahead. Okay, and I forgot another passage I was going to, but that's correct. So then we've got that, and if you want a list of some of these things about learning by inference, I'll give you five, email me, and I'll send you five places where Jesus made statements and he made arguments, and he left it to the people to infer the conclusion of what he said. He did not state the conclusion. They had to infer it. I can give you five places in the scriptures, there are more, where the scriptures make an argument and come to a conclusion that is inferred from other information. So anybody who wants to ridicule the idea of statements and precedent and inference, is they're on really shaky ground. Okay, so then we send a council of people together and they get together in Jerusalem and they write up some bylaws. Is that it?
No.
Are there religious organizations that do that?
Yes.
Yes, nearly all of them do that. And where are the bylaws that we have to go to? You know that, the Word of God, obviously. Okay, so we've got the principle. We're going to answer a problem. What is in the relief of the needy? What is the responsibility of the congregation? It's not up to us to decide. It's not up to us to decide, well, this is good. It's up to us to go to the Word of God and find what God has said, I want done. As far as doing good and helping other people, do you have any responsibility? Yes, we've read the passages that give us responsibility, and maybe we need to do more of that than we do. I know of people in the past who, when I've mentioned this, they would take funds just regularly if they had some extra money, and they would stick it aside, maybe even a separate bank account. And that was there to wait until they found somebody who's in need, and they sent it to them. I know a family that did that, and Jeff and Scott, when they were preaching their early years, these people, they weren't in desperate need, but they knew they could use the help. So they just took $500, sent to Jeff, $500 sent to Scott. And people just used to do that. And that's unselfishness, and we need to be unselfish. And we have responsibilities to help other people. So we're not saying, this person's not a Christian, I'm not going to help him. No, we don't do that. But as a congregation, we're studying what is the work of the congregation. So going back, we have a... That's the next passage I was going to. Good for you. All right, now that's thinking ahead of me. So what are our responsibilities? Just quote it again.
Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good unto all men.
All right. Turn over there. There are some who say that's not speaking to individuals. In Galatians, the 6th chapter and verse 10. And the reason they say it is this. If we start reading verse 6. But let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. And so this is giving support to those who preach the gospel and those who teach. And so since the church does that, this must be talking about the church. Is that a logical conclusion? No, it's a leap, and it is not a logical conclusion. It doesn't say let the congregation that is taught communicate to him. Let him. He's speaking of an individual that is taught the word, communicated to him that teacheth in all good things. And it goes ahead to give this responsibility. And it says, in due season we shall reap if we faint not. And when we talk about reaping and what we're going to reap, we're going to do that as Christians, because in Romans 14:12, each one of us shall do what? So then each one of us shall, okay, take a look at it, Romans 14:12. Give an account unto God. So we're going to give an account. We're going to reap. This is talking to individuals. By living like this, by helping others, you're going to reap. And you're going to reap when you give an account. And you're doing that. You're not going to be judged as a congregation. You're not going to stand up there in judgment and say, Lord, I was a member of Exton, and Exton was a great congregation. So I'm ready for you to open the door and take me right in. No, Exton may have been a great congregation. I may not have been a great member and participant. Or very faithful in that congregation. We're not going to be judged as congregations. Remember, there's the distinction between individuals and congregations, and we're going to be judged not by the congregation, but we're going to be judged as what? Each one of us. And besides this, Paul says, there are others who compel you to be circumcised. Now, are we talking about individuals or are we talking about congregations? I don't think that's a difficult question to answer. I don't know many churches that got circumcised or were compelled to be circumcised. This is talking about individual responsibility. As we have opportunity, therefore it says, let us do good. So with that, I think I'm about ready to go ahead to this pattern or mold for congregational function. Turn to first. Okay, we're not ready for that yet. Just hold that. I don't have time to go off to that. That's individual, yes. I want you to go right now to 1 Corinthians 16, verses 1 through 3. That's right. Art's right on the point he's going to make. I just don't have time to go into that. Somebody read that for us, please. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 3. Okay, so let's start at the back of that passage. You're going to have a bounty ready when I get there because you're giving on the first day of the week. And this bounty was for what in the first verse? Second verse? For the saints. And as I gave order to the churches of Galatia, so do you. And when I get there, now Paul's got in mind when we study the book of Acts, and we study the book of Romans, and we study here, and in 2 Corinthians, there was the relationship smooth in the early church between Jew and Gentile? What was the problem? Was it the Gentiles or the Jews who had a problem? Who were the people living in Jerusalem? Who was Paul in this area of the world, in Achaia and Macedonia? Mostly those people were what? So you've got people over here who are in need, and he wants these people who are Gentiles to send over here to help these who? Jews in need. And that is to cement their relationship and relieve some of the prejudice of the Jews. That's what Paul has got in mind here. But were the Christians in Jerusalem the only needy people there? You think there was nobody needy in Jerusalem except Christians? You look at any of our cities, are Christians the only people who are needy? No. But he was sending these funds not to Jerusalem in general, but to who in Jerusalem? No. Saints. The needy saints. That's right. Concerning the collection for the saints. Now hold your question here. Then is this passage just talking about sending money elsewhere to needy saints? No, we're going to find passages where they're responsible for their local saints also who are in need. Tell me the only way that is authorized for churches to get their funds in the New Testament.
First day of the week collection.
Yeah, right here. This is the only way. Now, in this passage, it's talking about a specific thing to do with that. But churches did other things with their money. In Acts, the fourth chapter, they laid their funds at the apostles' feet, and distribution was given unto all as they had need. That's that local group of saints. So when they combined their funds, it wasn't just a send elsewhere. But Paul is saying now, for these funds that you're going to send to Jerusalem, as I gave order to the churches of Galatia, so also do you. And note, was this, there are two things here. One is giving on the first day of the week. The other is sending these funds to Jerusalem. Were both of those ordered? No. Which one was ordered? Whatever it was he said to the churches of Galatia. Did he tell the churches of Galatia to send funds anywhere else? No, he didn't. Did the churches of Galatia send as a part of this? No, they didn't. Turn to Romans 15. Paul has now collected these funds, or about to, and then he says this in verse 25, Romans 15, 25. But now I say, going to Jerusalem, ministering to the
saints.
Ah, okay. For it has been the good pleasure of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints at Jerusalem. These funds that Paul has taken to Jerusalem came from churches where? Macedonia and Achaia. Did the churches of Galatia send? No, they're not a part of these funds that are being taken by Paul. So the churches of Galatia were not commanded to have part in this. That's a different part of the world where there are a lot more Jews in this Gentile area that he's getting funds from to send to the Jews. So what was it he ordered the churches of Galatia to do that he's ordering them to do also? Ah, oh, good for you. That's exactly right. Got an A, 100 over here. I told them, collection on the first day of the week. I'm telling you. And this is where you're going to get the funds to send to Jerusalem from this collection on the first day of the week. In fact, the wording in that text is that many translations translated in accurately. So every first day of the week. So we come together, we collect funds together, we treasure it up. And as a congregation from those funds, in every instance in the New Testament where they were expended to help needy people, it was needy what? Saints, in every instance. Now then, if I'm going to follow the mold and the pattern of sound words, when we spend the money that we collect together here, do we have the responsibility to every needy person in the world? No, we do not. If you took every church of Christ in the whole world, they could not supply the needs of needy people in New York City for 1 week. And God just didn't give congregations that responsibility. Now, where Christians are in New York, I'm sure they help people who are in need. And I know some of you here, and I know there are people here that I don't know anything about, but have done. You help other people. When they're in need, you help them, and you encourage people by helping them in that capacity. So we've got individuals and their responsibility. We've got congregations and their responsibility. Our responsibility is all, as we have opportunity. The congregation, its funds are called a fellowship, and we'll see that in a moment, and that's limited to needy saints. Okay, with that established, let me see what else I want to go ahead and do. I need to establish that the sending to Jerusalem was not commanded. Turn over to 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter. Corinth had started this, then they grew slack in it, and Paul's encouraging them to get back to getting these funds together. And then this is what he said in verse 10. And herein I give my judgment that it is expedient for you who were at first to make a beginning a year ago, not only to do, but also to will, but not complete the doing this also. As there was readiness to will, that there may be the completion of this, for the readiness is there. If the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to a man as he hath and as he hath not. I read that badly, but I hope you're following along. And I want to back up in the text, really, verse 8. In doing this, he said, I speak not by what? Did he command the churches of Galatia to do something? What? To collect, yes. As I gave order to the churches of Galatia, so also do you. So he's commanded Corinth and the churches of Galatia to collect funds on the first day of the week. As far as expending this and sending it to Jerusalem, did he command them to do it? No, he said not by way of commandment, but he's urging them to do this to show their love and the same kind of love that Jesus Christ does. And he did say, and this is an important passage, God doesn't require of you or anybody else what they cannot do. It is acceptable as a man wills, and if he can't do it, he can't do it. In other words, let me illustrate, that's often a point I shouldn't go on. So, Art, excuse me for knocking your point aside and then adding this point, but I'll add it. With the mouth, with the heart, man believeth unto righteousness, and with the mouth, confession is made unto salvation. What is unto salvation? What do you do unto salvation? Confess with what? Suppose you're mute. Confession is made unto salvation. With the mouth, confession is made unto salvation. Can the mute person be saved then because he cannot confess with his mouth? Oh, yes. How do you know that? Are you just making it up? Because of this verse which says, God expects of you what you can do, not what you can't do. Okay, that's true. Oh, that's a side point. But anyhow, we're ready now then to study and to see what all took place. Let me see what I want to do here next. We've got that. We've got 1 Corinthians 16. It says saints. I want you to go to 2 Corinthians 8. 2 Corinthians 8, please. And we'll look at verse 4. Beseeching, now he's talking about what the churches of Macedonia have done that Corinth is not getting done. Beseeching us with much entreaty in regard of this grace, the fellowship in the ministration to the what?
Saints.
This is a fellowship. We don't have fellowship with the world. As a congregation, we don't have fellowship with the world. We have fellowship with saints. And we extend this fellowship by when there are needy saints elsewhere, we send to those saints. Then come on down to verse 24, and we'll read 9 and verse 1. Show you therefore in them the face of our of the children. I used to read pretty well. Show you therefore unto them in the face of the churches the proof of your love and the glory on your behalf. For as touching the what? Ministering to the saints. Okay. Come on over to verse 13. And there's a point in this we're going to have to take time to do in just a moment. But it speaks of seeing that through the proving of you by this ministration, they, the saints that have been mentioned before, glorify God for the obedience of your confession unto the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of your contribution, koinonia, fellowship, unto them who? What? Okay. And unto all. Okay. You notice in some of your translations, though, it has in italics all men. The word all is the little word. I'm not even going to go into that. Jeff can do that. I will too. It's pos. I can do little simple things in Greek. Jeff can do all great things in Greek. It means all of a category. What is the category here that is being talked about? It's in 1 Corinthians 16, in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, three times. It is a contribution for the? Okay, so it's unto them and unto all the saints. Well, what's that meaning? I had this on PowerPoint this morning, and, I hear better. There. That worked up my ear better. I've got a hearing aid in there. Now, it just started working. And I don't know what happened, but when I went to find the PowerPoint I had for you, it said, seat backup something F. And I go to that and it says, sorry, we don't have that. You got to go to backup. So I printed out what I wanted you to read. And what I'm commenting on this is, there are those who read this verse and they say, contribution unto them, saints, and unto all men. First of all, what saints is it referring to here specifically? The saints where? In Jerusalem. So unto them and unto all. And what is the antecedent in this passage to all? All refers to a specified class or category. And the specified class or category is saints. So it's unto Jerusalem and unto all saints. And here's what Thayer says about this. I want you to see it so that you know I'm not just telling you something, that there is some language scholarship behind this. Pos, in 2 Corinthians 9:13, Thayer says, of the class denoted by the noun annexed, and the noun annexed in this passage is what? Saints. Totality of some of things, the context showing what things are meant. In the context, who is it being helped in every instance? Saints. Saints being specified in this context and other related passages, the all would be in that classification emphasized by the fact that the contribution is the word koinonia. It uses in this passage having the sense, the embodiment and proof of fellowship. So to the saints and to all includes the people who are in fellowship, and saints is the antecedent to the all, and so it is all saints. And Meyer comments a little bit further on it in defining the term. And he says this, all refers to the persons, namely to them, the receivers themselves, and all Christians in general. Paul rightly adds, eis pontes, that is, unto all. for the beneficence toward the Jews the Corinthians showed by the beneficence toward the Jews the Christians showed, they excluded no Christians from the sincere fellowship of love. So the Jerusalem saints thank God for the obedience of the Corinthians, and that in giving contribution, fellowship, sharing to them, it demonstrated a fellowship to all saints, not just to Gentiles, as they them also. You know, you've seen me fall a couple of times out here. It's not really a fall. I've got a dead toe. And when I get in a hurry, that drags. And when you're younger, you can get your other foot in front and not fall. But in the present state of my lower legs, once that process starts, I'm going down, so I just go down. And it's because I am hurrying. And when it sounds like I can't read this morning, it's because I am hurrying. We're going to make it in time, thankfully. But we've covered a lot of material. So let me read this again. So the Jerusalem saints, does that sound better? Thanked God for the obedience of the Corinthians, and that in giving contribution, fellowship, sharing to them, it demonstrated a fellowship to all saints, not just to Gentiles, but also themselves, Jews, that they, the Corinthians, Gentiles, excluded no Christians from the sincere fellowship of love. So remember, we start out, there's a problem. The Jews are resentful of the Gentiles. They think they're moving in on their territory. And besides, there's this thing of circumcision. They've learned all this time they want these Gentiles to be circumcised, and they're not going to be saved. And even though that truth has been established, there's still this tension that is there. And we'll read a passage in just a moment that we've read already and emphasize this. By this, Paul hopes to seal and bring together the appreciation. And he is saying that is what is done. By this contribution, it shows to the Jews that these Gentiles don't think just of themselves. It's like we, when we sent money to India and Philippines, we don't just think of Americans. We've helped saints those saints, and we show our love for all saints. We don't just help American saints. We help Filipino saints. We help Indian saints. And that's the idea here. These Gentiles, they don't just keep their money among themselves. They have reached out to us as Jews. And they have sent these funds to help us here in Jerusalem. And then that's the impact Paul is wanting to accomplish there. With that, turn over to 2 Corinthians, the 9th chapter. 2 Corinthians 9. I will try to read this better because I've got tired. Let's start with verse 10. He that supplieth seed to the sower and bread for food shall supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the fruits of your righteousness. You take a grain of corn, you put it down, and you get two whole ears of grains. And he's saying, you, by your giving this, you're going to accomplish more than just nickels and dimes being given to someone. You being enriched in everything unto all liberality, which worketh through us thanksgiving to God, for the ministration of this service not only filleth up the wants of the saints, but aboundeth also through many thanksgivings unto God. So what is accomplished by these Gentiles sending to the Jews? Not only does it fill up their wants, it causes them to give thanks to God for what? Not just what they got, but for these Gentiles who are showing love for them. Watch it. Seeing that through the proving of your ministration, they glorify God for the obedience of your confession unto the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of your fellowship contribution unto them and unto all. They just give to, they don't just limit to Jews like some of us has been doing. They give to all. And that's the point that is made in this particular passage. Okay, I think I've covered most of what I wanted to cover. Anybody got any questions? Short questions or comments? Okay.
And that reflects what you're saying.
Yeah, the amplified, amplifying the meaning of the term. Yes, exactly. How?
Little context. I lived through some of the divisions, as you did in the 50s and 60s. Where this is going is a lot of churches tried to make a scriptural as the church, out of the church treasury, could basically help anyone. So then it became a buffet of so-called good works. So that's a good work to help this hospital, or this group, or this these flood victims that are not Christians, etc. And the point I'm making, if you go back to some of the older commentaries before these issues came up in the 50s and 60s, there was no question, there was no doubt what verses like this meant. Verse 12 sets the context that Paul is talking about the saints, just as you said. But these arguments that were made in modern times, 50s, 60s, and 70s, and later, can be easily refuted by the passages and things that you've shown.
Okay, so that's a good summary. Anybody else got a comment you want to make? Go ahead. Because as individuals, you have a lot more things to do in life than being associated with just assembly service and community service in the capacity of a congregation. Just think, I thought of one last night, and I'm not thinking of it now. Can you think of anything, husbands love your wives, fathers discipline your children, the church better not spank my children. That's one illustration. I mean, you could that starts, you can go on and on from there. So we have, as individuals, a lot broader responsibility than the congregation does when it's associated with this he wants his groups to do, his communities, local communities to do, in taking care of their needs. We can't take care of the needs of the world. Now, as we're out there in the world, all of us can and ought to. And remember, I want to emphasize that. Go ahead. Let me pause right there. Very good thought. So just looking at the negative part, yes, let's look at and do what we have done. And there are opportunities to do that as a congregation and as individuals. Now go ahead with any more you want to sell on the line. Okay. No, that's so we don't want to just say, okay, you sit here and you can't do this. No, this also emphasizes what we can't. A couple more points. We are not to, among ourselves, give to sustain a manner of life. It's people who are in need, who are in want. I've known congregations where somebody with sufficient funds had a financial problem, and so they took funds from the congregation, gave to them to help them out, and they, even with their problem, are better off than some of the other Christians down here. That's not what this is for. This is for the wants, for the needs of the saints. And that's another thing to keep in consideration here. And we'll have friends out in the world. If you want us to help them, help them. If you need more help than you can give, get another brother to help you help them. But as a congregation, these funds, it is a fellowship. And it is a shared thing among the saints so that our people are lifted up and they have their brethren lifting them up. As a congregation, that's the responsibility. As individuals, to whom? Work that which is good toward all men, and especially to those who are of the household of saints. Okay, thank you for your discussion. We made it. Appreciate it.